Mercy is for the weak. We do not train to be merciful here. A man face you, he is enemy. Enemy deserve no mercy.
Hey everybody, welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
I'm Richard.
And I'm Rima.
This is House Podcastica Cobra Kai Edition.
This week we're covering The Karate Kid Part 2.
Part 2.
middle child.
The neglected one.
It's the Jan Brady of Karate Kid movies. So Netflix, I wanted to let you guys know why we're covering this, because some of you guys don't know. You're like, what happened to Cobra Kai season 2? And it came out that the date for when it's going to be on Netflix is August 28th. That's when they're moving Cobra Kai season 1 and 2 over. They have not yet announced when season 3 will be on there, but we were thinking that they'll have 1 and 2 over for a little while, maybe a couple months or something, give people enough time to watch it, and then introduce 3, hopefully this year. That'd be awesome. But anyway, Steve Brown suggested, hey, why don't you guys wait until it comes on Netflix to cover it? That way more people have access. And I'm like, yeah, that's a good idea. So that's what we're going to do. So in the meantime, you know, we already covered The Karate Kid, the original movie. We thought this month we'd just go ahead and cover Karate Kid 2 and Karate Kid 3 biweekly. So this episode, we will be talking about The Karate Kid Part 2. And then in 2 weeks, we'll do Karate Kid 3, and then after that, we'll jump back into Cobra Kai Season 2.
So please email any complaints to Steve Brown.
No. steve@gmail.com. And then also, I might as well mention the plan that I've heard so far is for The Mandalorian Season 2 to come back in October, and we are planning to come back and cover that too. I'm really looking forward to that coming back.
Yeah.
Got Michael Biehn coming on there, and who else?
Really?
Katie Sackhoff.
Whoa.
Battlestar Galactica. Yeah, it's going to be good. There were a couple other cool ones. I forget who they are.
It's hard to believe.
Tim Oliphant.
Hard to believe they can improve on an already great cast and excitement, but sounds like it's going to be pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean, when you have a show that's so hot like that, then maybe it's easy to get people interested, you know, good people. Tim Oliphant's going to be on there. Did you know Tim Oliphant?
No, not. I mean, I knew of him, but didn't.
He was in our school. He was 2 years ahead of us, and he was a kind of a hunky guy from what I could tell, even back then.
Yeah. we have two major movie stars from our school.
Yeah.
The other being Jeremy Renner.
Yeah, Jeremy Renner. Who, I forget if I told this on the podcast, but we had our 10-year reunion, and me and Rich were there, and Dan and our other friends, and Jeremy Renner was just, this was before any of his movies or anything, he was just like, hey, I'm in commercials and stuff, I'm an actor. And we're like, okay, yeah. Jeremy.
Yeah. Whatever. Great. And good for you.
Then our 20-year reunion, he was Hawkeye.
Yeah. Fashionably late with a bunch of chicks on his arm. It's
like, yep.
Whoa.
Good job, Jeremy. Shouldn't have doubted him. But we're getting way off track. Let's get into our top 3 highlights for The Karate Kid Part 2. Rima, how long had it been since you'd seen this before now?
You know, honestly,
you know?
No, I don't. It's been quite a long time. I know that. I know it's been more recent since it released. It wasn't like, you know, way back when it came out. I might have seen it, you know, a few times after that. But honestly, I couldn't tell you. It has been quite some time. I remembered most of what happened. I mean, I remember the story and the basics of what happened. But, you know, it certainly brought a lot back
It's pretty much the same for me. Yeah. I know I saw it back when it premiered, obviously, and I probably saw it a couple times in the theater, and I probably saw it maybe two or three times since then, and I can't remember the last time. And I've seen The Karate Kid, the original, at least 30 or 40 times. So this one I didn't have quite as burned in my brain. But anyway, how did you like it watching it now?
You know, I've never been shy about sharing my feelings about how I always felt about the first one. But for some reason, even though I wasn't a huge fan of the first movie, I always enjoyed the second movie more for some reason. I mm-hmm. don't really know why. I don't know if it was just a story or something that connected with me. I'm not really sure. But I always enjoyed the second one a little bit more than the first one. So it was good. It was good to see it. And it was, you know, kind of brought back a lot of good memories watching it again. Some of those good feelings.
That's cool. I'll be interested to know, why you like it more. I mean, somebody else, some of the listeners said the same thing, at least one person I can think of. Rich, what about you? How'd you like it?
Yeah, I wouldn't say I liked it better than the first one, but I liked them both probably about equally the same. You know, this one had a whole different setting, a whole different culture going on in the background. You know, the story focused more on Miyagi, which I thought was cool, and then you got, you know, all new supporting cast and an all new villain. So it was good. In fact, I like it better each time I see it. So
cool.
Now we're about on par with the first one.
You should just watch it 10 more times and you'll be like, it's fucking amazing.
It's way better than the first one. First one sucks. Like,
yeah. I just want to watch this more. I'm kind of the opposite of you guys. I enjoyed it, but I never liked it more than the first one, but that's hard to do because the first one is just one of my favorite movies ever. But yeah. B, it didn't even hold up as well as I thought it would. I haven't seen it in years. And I did like it more on second watch. I watched it twice over the last couple of days, which I'm glad for, because I was finding a lot of nitpicks and things like that the first time through. So anyway, I did like it. I did like it, but it's hard to reach the heights of the original Karate Kid for me. But for me now, having seen this and I know how I'm going to feel about the third one. I mean, we'll see, but I know it's not as good. For me now, the Karate Kid, I like better than anything. And then after that is Cobra Kai, the series, and then this movie. So I actually like the series better than this movie, which actually feels kind of good since we're covering it and everything.
Was that right?
Yeah, because it's more modern in its sensibilities and it's more self-aware and kind of clever. And I don't know. It's got a lot of great things about it. The series, I mean.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, that makes sense. In fact, I think I like the series better than both these movies, to be honest with you.
Than any of it.
100%. Huh? Yeah.
Yeah. I guess I should have figured that. All right, let's get into our top three. Rima, you want to go first?
Sure. So my number three, I'm just going to jump in with one of my favorite parts about the second movie here. And that is, like you mentioned, Rich, we get some backstory to Mr. Miyagi, which I really like. I mean, we get so many hints of it throughout the first movie, right? But, you know, we just get little pieces. You know, we find out he's a war hero and we find out where he's from. And we get little tidbits and you just know that there's an interesting story there. Like, he's such an interesting character and seems so complicated. And you really kind of want to know where he comes from and see his home. And we really get to see that here in this one. And I love the change of scenery. Where we go to Okinawa, even though it wasn't really filmed in Okinawa or in Japan, you know, that's kind of what we're being presented. So you just kind of go with it that, you know, this scenery of Okinawa and this, you know, beautiful scenery. And then we get to hear the love, about the love story between him and Yuki and why he left Okinawa and why he never had been back. And, I thought that that was a really nice story and learn about the broken friendship with him and Sato. So I thought that, there was just really interesting storytelling and I thought it went well. I liked it anyway. I don't know what other people's thoughts are, but I just really love that whole Miyagi backstory and just seeing kind of learning more about him and where he came from and his relationship with his father, his relationship with Yuki, Sato, and how much he, you know, even though he hadn't been back to his village, how he still really loved the people and loved his little village. Thought that was nice.
And apparently he still has a place there because he told Daniel he was giving it to Yukie in the will.
Yeah.
If he died. Yeah, yeah, I
village
mean,
house.
I remember after watching this, I had to keep his history straight because in the first movie, that scene where he's drinking and, you know, kind of babbling and Daniel helps put him to bed there and he's talking about his wife and how he was in the war and he was told that his wife and unborn child died in childbirth. And I just realized recently they were in Manzanar, by the way, which I think is one of those concentration camps. I'm not sure about that, but that makes it even more messed up and tragic. While he's fighting for the U.S., his wife and child are in a concentration camp. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so that was like a huge moment in his life. And here in this movie, it's not mentioned, you know, it's just all about his first love before that. And I'm like, well, I guess that makes sense. People are allowed to have more than one big love in their life. Totally. But it did feel a little bit like when he said to Yukie, you know, the only mistake I made was not taking you with me. I'm like, isn't that a little disrespectful to your first wife who you never would have met?
If that right.
Didn't happen.
He was just totally in the moment, man.
Yeah, I guess that's true. he's kind of a smooth guy. Never yeah. keep an idea waiting.
He's a fascinating dude. I felt the same way. Oh, shoot, I forgot what I was going to say. But one of my highlights is Miyagi's family history. I thought that was pretty cool. I enjoyed his story of, I'm not sure I'm pronouncing this right, Shimpo Sensei, the first guy up there hanging on the wall.
Oh, yeah.
He
explains how he brought it from China. One day, strong wind, strong sun, strong sake. He explains how Shimpo's boat was carried from the coast of Okinawa to the coast of China because he fell asleep drunk, presumably. And then 10 years later, he returns with a wife and kids and the secret to Miyagi family karate. So that was cool. I wonder why is this the first time we learn of the secret robot-like left-right repeating beat-down drum technique thing? I mean, why didn't he teach him that in the beginning? What's the whole deal with the crane kick? Was that just...
Yeah.
I was a little confused there.
Yeah. I mean, the truth is that it's because the crane technique was the special cinematic move of the first movie. And then when they decided to write the second movie, they're like, well, we have to think of another one of those. And they thought of this drum technique.
Yeah.
But in story, I guess you could say, you know, you learn new moves all the time, depending on what level you're at.
You mentioned, they kind of threw out his or ignored his family history with his wife and kid. They did the same thing with the crane kick here. Well, that's not true. They did do the crane kick at the end, but it sucked.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, that's a little bit of an inconsistency because he said if you do it right, there's no defense.
Defense. Yeah. And
I mean, either he didn't do it right or that was bullshit.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, Chosen, he had no trouble defending against that crane kick.
Yeah, yeah, you just block it.
Swiped it right aside.
like any kick.
Yeah, no worries. You got nothing, boy. That's what I was thinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but it was cool. Like, you know, it was the same. You see him do that, and it's like, oh, yeah. And Miyagi gives the same look that he did when Daniel started that move in the tournament. Like, yeah, go, you do it. And then he fails, and it's like, oh, shit.
Yeah, I felt the same way about Miyagi, Rima. I like when he wasn't on screen, I found myself a couple of times thinking, I wonder what Miyagi's doing right now. Yeah. Give us some more Miyagi.
Yeah, no kidding. And I love tradition of everything too, you know, learning about the traditions. I love hearing about other cultures and their traditions. And so that was, you know, a fun part for me of the movie.
Yeah, it was. I think it was really a bold choice to go to another country for part two, a whole new setting, new culture. And, you know, you've mentioned a couple times, Rich, that this is more of Miyagi's movie. And I think the first movie was Daniel's story and Miyagi getting caught up in Daniel's problems. And this is the opposite. It's Miyagi's story and Daniel getting caught up in Miyagi's problems. And there's a lot of similarities between the two movies, but it is a big departure in some ways the main one just being in another culture in another country. And I think that actually worked pretty damn well. It was maybe a risky move, but it was a good one.
Right. You don't see that too much in 80s movies.
Yeah.
Except there was no subtitles. Did that bother you guys? I mean, why is everyone speaking Japanese. Broken English?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, when the Japanese characters are talking to each other, they're talking in English. They should be talking in Japanese.
Yeah.
Miyagi and Yugi-e should be talking in Japanese, and Miyagi and Sato should be.
Or maybe that's just something they do now, and they didn't do it back then.
It is. I mean, American audiences were not comfortable with subtitles in the 80s, especially in mainstream movies, and so that's probably why they didn't do it. And I remember watching Lost with Sun and Jin, who are Korean, and they decided in their flashbacks to do it in Korean with subtitles.
It's all subtitles.
And they were talking about how that was a risk, and the network didn't want them to do that, but they wanted to, and so they pushed it, and it went fine. I thought it was great.
With Sun and Jin.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it was a big deal it was considered a risk to do that. So, and that was in the 2000s. So I think, you know, back in the 80s, they just didn't want to do it. But now with modern sensibilities, where we're a little more used to that, it does seem kind of like, why are they speaking in English? Then we probably didn't even question it.
Yeah. Yeah. The world has gotten a little smaller, huh?
Yeah, totally.
Or it could just be a bunch of fat cats, executives of a movie, thinking they know what's best, and they're totally wrong.
Yeah, I mean, they want to be safe. You know, the first time you do something different is, they're like, what about our money? We might not make as much.
Right, yeah.
Scared. Anything else?
I got some notes, but we can do those later.
Okay, should I do the stuff I liked first, or get out of the way the stuff I didn't like?
Do the bad news first.
Do the bad stuff first. Yeah. So we'll keep it positive as we end it, and maybe we'll get you turned around a little bit.
Good. No, I'm glad you said that. I like that better. Okay. This is stuff I didn't like, or, you know, that didn't hold up well for me, or some that I just found odd, or that I was maybe on the fence about, but wasn't like a giant yes to. At the beginning, I thought it was a little weird that his mom wasn't there. I mean, they said she was in the restaurant with Allie waiting. But it was just felt kind of contrived to explain why they weren't there at the end of the tournament. And then, Allie crashed his car and fell in love with a football player. I mentioned this already on the podcast, but that felt like in Aliens when the whole movie was about trying to save this little girl, and then in the next movie, oh, she's dead in the first 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Right, yep.
Yeah, I have thoughts on that.
But apparently Elizabeth Shue, I just learned this today, was supposed to return for a breakup scene, which I don't even know if that would have been any better. But anyway, she had taken a break from acting, was at Harvard, and so I guess that's why she wasn't in it.
Mm.
Yep.
And then that Daniel's mom, just, she's not there, and she just kind of lets him go and lets him spend all his college money. And I'm like, wasn't she like Miss Overprotective? So that seemed a little I guess she's come to really trust Mr. Miyagi. I don't know how Daniel got a passport either. I mean, they made a big deal out of how Miyagi got one a day before because he had a plane ticket in hand. I guess Daniel went and hustled and got one too.
Right.
I hesitate to mention this one, but I was feeling at times their relationship was a little bit much. Like, you know, Miyagi tells Daniel that he's going to be leaving the next day, and Daniel's like, oh, well, I'll come by. And Miyagi says, well, I'm leaving at 6 or something. And then he's waiting by the taxi, like upset that Daniel's not there to say goodbye to him. It's like, just who cares? Just go.
Why do you?
Aww.
I don't know.
I felt bad for Mr. Miyagi. I don't know. I mean, they're kind of like father and son.
It's not like they're lovers. Yeah, I guess they're father and son. And then when Daniel shows up at the airport to go, and he's like, I want to go with you. And Miyagi's like, well, this is for your college. And he goes, you're more important than college. You're more important than anything to me. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
You're a 16-year-old kid, dude. So I don't know. It just felt a little weird.
Got some daddy issues.
Yeah. But don't get me wrong. I love that relationship. I think their chemistry is great, but it just felt, I think the writers were caught up in how much people are like what I just said. They love that pair in the first movie, so they just made it like they're so tight that they're the most important thing to each other. And it felt a little bit extreme to me. It takes a while to get to the plot, which is fine because I'm really glad that they showed that tournament aftermath. But then there's a lot of exposition about Miyagi's past and everything, which I'm also interested in, but it just felt a little bit draggy at times. The thing about, speaking English I had in here, the drum technique. Now, even back when I saw this movie the first time and just liked it a lot, I never really got the drum technique. It seemed like a stretch. The camera angle while he was using it, it really is not clear what the hell's going on. And, you know, obviously he's hitting him, but you can't see. Is he blocking? Is he dodging? How are the drums helping? Like, is it just to remind him, or is that supposed to be some kind of a rhythmic thing or a meditative thing? And then, you know, when Miyagi was teaching it to him, he said, you know, remember best block, no be there. So that sounds like it's a dodging thing. But obviously it's a hitting thing too. And Miyagi didn't really explain it to him. And then we don't really get to see it because the camera doesn't even show what's happening, really. It's like on his face. And right. I suspect maybe that's because the wide angle just didn't look good or something, but I don't know. Or maybe it's just supposed to be mysterious. But in IMDb, there's a FAQ. They say, is the drum technique a real method used in karate? How does it work? They say, no. The drum technique, like the crane kick in the first movie, was made up for the film. It appears to involve a block by the leading hand and a strike from the trailing hand. As you turn to the right, for example, your right hand sweeps your opponent's hands in front of him. Then, as you're still turning, your left hand delivers a strike which he can't defend against. Then you repeat this, turning to the left, but this time the left hand sweeps and blocks while the right hand strikes. Hmm. And so I'm like, all right, well, what does that have to do with remember best block? No be there, you're blocking and hitting. So it still like doesn't totally make sense. Also, if Sato and Miyagi both learned from Miyagi's father, which the movie says they did, and the drum was the key to the Miyagi technique, and Sato was Chozen's teacher, then wouldn't Chozen know the technique too?
I thought about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And also, you know, he said, when Daniel says, is there a counterpunch, Miyagi says, ask the drum. And I don't know what that means, but I presume it means, well, does the drum have a counterpunch to those little things hitting it? No, it just gets hit. So, but that, I feel like that's silly. There's a counter to every technique, which, for example, the crane technique we saw was countered, even though Miyagi said, if do right, no defense. So I don't know the whole drum technique. I mean, I thought the fight was great, which I'll talk about when I talk about what I liked. And I thought it was really dramatic even when he was doing the drum technique, because he was obviously beating the crap out of Chozen. So it was intense and dramatic, but just the technique itself, I feel like it's super vague and I don't get it. So that makes it less, it just makes me have this feeling of doubt and confusion about it, which isn't good.
Maybe the drums were like his Eye of the Tiger anthem. I don't know. And I agree with what you said as far as, you know, the technique wasn't really taught, wasn't explained very well, and I had issues with that as well. But, you know, he wasn't really taught the crane kick technique in one either. He saw Mr. Miyagi doing the crane technique, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Daniel just does it in the tournament. Yeah.
But it's a little more clear. Felt flat to me. You're kicking someone, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
What's going on there?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. I understood what he was doing with the drum technique. I understood that, you know, he's blocking, and as he's turning, he's blocking and then hitting, and then when he turns the other way, he's blocking and hitting, you know, with the opposite hands. And so, I mean, it wasn't explained very well, and we didn't get a very clear shot of it. The angle that they shot wasn't great, but maybe it didn't look good with other shots, and maybe it made it even more vague. So I get that. But
the thing is, you can defend any technique, so
pretty much
maybe they couldn't figure out a way to film it so that it would look realistic that Chozen, this expert karate guy, could not defend himself against it.
Yeah, because he managed to defend against the crane technique, which was supposed to be indefensible. So right.
It looked like he was doing a rock'em sock'em robot move. That's what I remember. Just, left, right, his upper body. Boom. I didn't get the blocking part, though.
It was intense.
Yeah. I'm glad you guys were paying attention. I think I just wasn't listening to the explanation. Because if you just watched the video, which I had to go back and watch twice, he's just like, punch, and then left, and then right, and then left. Yeah. I'm like, what's he doing? He's beating the shit out of that guy.
Yeah. It's like he's punching a punching bag.
Flipping him. Yeah. All Kato had to do was move out of the way a little bit.
Right. Just back up.
I mean, not Kato. Chosen, sorry.
Well, now I hate the whole movie now, so...
Well, I've got more. I'm not done.
Okay, well.
I really liked the chemistry between Kumiko and Daniel. And I even thought the relationship between Yukie and Miyagi was sweet. But I didn't like the open-ended way that the love interest stories went. It was all this build-up and no resolution, and that made it just feel like the writers were like, we need romance in this movie. Like, for example, Yukie says she's known where Miyagi was for many years. It doesn't say how she knows that, but that she's never wrote out of respect for his silence, which I didn't quite understand mm-hmm. what that means. Maybe it means because he never wrote, so she figured he didn't want contact, but doesn't she know that he doesn't know that she didn't marry Sato? And so it was sort of confusing why she didn't write to him and tell him what happened. And it was hard to believe that Miyagi had no contact with his father all this time, or if he did, that, you know, he wouldn't have told him, hey, by the way, the reason why you left here, she never got married. So that was a little weird. And now now Yukie is saying she wants him to take him back to the U.S. with him, take mm-hmm. her back to the U.S. with him. I'm like, well, if you want that, why did you never write and see if it was a possibility? And then, you know, he tells Yukie, I would stay if I could. Why can't you stay? And then maybe it has to do with Sato. I don't know. But then, you know, why can't he take her home with him? I noticed he didn't answer that question. Maybe we missed the part where he's like, oh, did you hear something? I got to go check that out.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, it was sort of just like, well, we don't really have an answer for that, so we're not going to have the characters answer it.
Right. They're like teenagers all over again.
Yeah.
And
speaking of teenagers, Daniel tries to talk Kumiko into going to America for dance school after like 3 days of dating. I'm like, wow, that's pretty serious. I mean, I guess if she's going there for dance school, then it's for dance school, but really, you know, he wants to figure out a way they can spend more time together. He doesn't offer to stay there, of course. He's like, no, you uproot yourself and come to my homeland. But then we don't know what happened. I mean, she seems to be considering it, but then the way this movie ends is the same as the first. Daniel wins the fight, and Miyagi has that exact same proud look on his face, and then that's it. So I feel like this one could have used an epilogue, like what happened with these relationships that we spent this whole movie building, you know? We don't get resolution on that. We have to wait till Karate Kid 3, probably, I don't remember, but to find out, oh yeah, she fell in love with somebody else and wrecked his car or something. I don't know.
That's what happened. Just before they wrapped up the script for Karate Kid 2, a producer walked in and said, hey, good news, we're making Karate Kid 3. So they're like, oh, we gotta leave everything open-ended.
Yeah, I'm sure they knew by that time they wanted to make as many of them as they could. I thought the music was I liked the pan flutes and everything, but it seemed like it was more constant this time, to the point where it was a bit distracting. So I didn't feel like they used it as effectively as they did in the first movie for the most part. The whole ice chopping thing, I actually thought it was really funny that Kumiko's like, we don't want to go in there, that's a bad place. And he's like, oh, let's check it out. I'm like, I guess I can respect that. But anyways, it's kind of a coincidence that they're just chopping blocks of ice in there. That seemed a little silly, you know, this challenge just made for a karate student. Maybe that's what they do in Okinawa. I don't know. And then Chosen, who he just saw in his gi in the karate studio, punching all those American military police about literally 2 minutes earlier, suddenly shows up in his like Hawaiian shirt and is like,
yeah.
I mean, that was an editing, you know, like a continuity mistake. And then Miyagi comes in and he bets $600 that Daniel can break through all six blocks of ice. I mean, it was an exciting scene, and it's actually one of the signature scenes that stands out for me when I think about this movie. But watching it now, I'm like, really? Miyagi's sort of the type to kind of take a step back and not, you know, like goad people. He's karate's for defense only. And now he's like, not only saying, oh yeah, I'm sure he could do that, which he told Daniel, I had no doubt you could do it, but he rubs it in Sato's face. Pleasure do business with you. Yeah. And it's sort of like, it doesn't seem in character for him to egg them on like that.
So I think he was trying to intimidate him.
Why?
So they don't mess with him anymore. He's trying to get out of fighting.
Okay.
Maybe they knew. Maybe he figured if I show him what a badass I am and my students are, they'll stop trying to get me to fight.
Okay. Yeah. That's an explanation. The dancing scene, I loved the like 50s swing dancing stuff, but I thought it was kind of funny that after he's like swinging her around and pulling her between his legs, then later he says he learned to dance by being his mom's practice partner.
Like, whoa. Pretty close.
Let's see. I got a few more, you know, feeling like this is a little bit too much. So maybe I should, not go through the whole thing, but I guess one more theme is I did like that the stakes were raised in this one over the first one. And those guys, Chozen and Sato and all Chozen's goons, you just wanted Daniel and Miyagi to triumph over them because they're such assholes. But it was also sort of like they were just so, you know, so over the top bad guys with their big black car and their ominous music and always mean looks on their faces and just destroying everything all the time and wearing sunglasses. And, you know, Sato's an evil corporate overlord and they're tearing up gardens and just all the, like, just bad guys. And I guess that's typical 80s stuff and it's fine. But, you know, now that I'm introduced to the world of more nuanced TV, like Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, where people have good and bad and they're more, I don't know, just feels like they're more human. And this is just like one note bad guys. I mean, there is the whole thing about they felt like their honor was besmirched, which I actually did like, but I don't know. It just felt a bit simplistic, but I have to totally give it a pass because it's an 80s movie. And like I said, it is effective in making you want Daniel and Miyagi to triumph over them. So I don't know. I guess that's what I'm on the fence about. I'll stop there. That's enough.
Yeah. They definitely had good guys and bad guys, that's for sure.
Yeah.
That was very clear.
Black and white, just like the first one.
So, Rima, that all that stuff I said, did you agree with some of it, disagree with most of it?
I think I agreed with most of that. I mean, I definitely had things that I was, you know, nitpicked as I was watching it, and there was definitely those things were on my list as well, so I can't argue too much.
Mm-hmm. But like, I have little things with most movies, and if I really like a movie, it's like, yeah, it doesn't matter. And this movie, there were enough that I was sort of like, oh, I guess I don't like it as much as I used to, but I still like it.
Mm-hmm. I didn't notice most of that stuff. There was a couple of things I did, and I had questions too, but I chose to ignore it.
Yeah, it's probably the best way to go.
I think that's, I guess, how it goes. Like you said, if you like a movie, you can overlook some of that stuff. You might see it and be like, huh? But you're like, oh, well, whatever, you know. But if you don't really care much for a movie, then all of that really kind of stands out.
It stands out.
You know?
So me, I'm more on the like side, but not enough that I would overlook that stuff. But like a movie like Fight Club, which is one of my favorite movies ever, I'm sure you could nitpick the hell out of that, but I just don't care because I'm like, no, it's badass.
Yeah, you can nitpick every movie.
Yeah.
Totally.
Okay. Well, most of the stuff I have to say after this is positive, so we got that out of the way. Let's move on to our number two.
Well, actually, it's going to be a little something that I had a problem with, my number two, and that's that Allie got the short shrift in this movie. I did not care much at all that they made Allie seem kind of flighty in her behavior. With, you know, this whole breakup that happened and she crashes Daniel's car. Just that just seemed out of character for her. I mean, I maybe we didn't get to know her well enough in the first movie. I mean, I thought we got to see at least a decent picture of kind of who she was. I mean, she was definitely a go-getter. She was outgoing. She didn't take anybody's crap. She definitely stood up for what she believed in, you know, or, you know, stood up for people. But I guess we didn't get to know that much about her. So I really didn't like how they portrayed her in the second movie. And, you know, and then falling for the you know, guy at UCLA. I mean, I guess maybe her and Daniel's relationship wasn't really going to go anywhere. And I mean, it's not like I was like, oh, I hope they're together forever. I wasn't like shipping them or anything. But, you know, I guess he was like the rebound guy after she broke up with Johnny. And maybe they were kind of doomed from the start. But it just, I didn't like how it really ended things. And maybe they needed to end things on a bad note. So that way they could move Daniel's story with Kumiko forward, like we would be okay with him having a relationship with her and moving on to someone else, because of, you know, if he and Allie were broken up and it ended badly, then we'd be okay with that. But if it wasn't, you know, maybe if it was something different, we wouldn't be on board with that. So maybe that's why they decided to do it. And you were right. She didn't come back because she went back to Harvard in 85. So I guess she wasn't available and they never filmed the breakup scene, which I don't think would have really benefited. It
wouldn't have been any better.
Yeah, yeah, it wouldn't have helped the situation at all. So, I mean, I'm not sad that they didn't do that. But I really hope that she comes back in season three of Cobra Kai, because I want to hear her side of things.
Right.
Like, I feel like they've just left her in the dirt and said,
they'll address
you know,
it, I bet.
Yeah, so I, you know, and she'll and I feel like they've given us hints of that, you know, when we, you know, the last season when we covered, you know, Johnny and Daniel talking about, you know, reminiscing about her and stuff, and kind of didn't really get any other details about what happened or anything. But clearly they both still have some lingering thoughts and feelings about her. And as we've learned in Cobra Kai, there's a lot of gray area. It's not just black and white, and, you know, even the good characters have flaws and, some of the
bad, they all have their perspectives and
exactly. They all have their different sides of the story.
Feel like the hero.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm really hoping we get to hear a little bit about Allie, and we get to, you know, kind of hear more of that backstory about what really happened and hear her side, because I feel like we only got Daniel's side and feel like there's more to it than that. So
well,
I was just a little disappointed.
It's weird that she crashed the car supposedly at prom, which he's still dressed for, and then she fell for somebody at UCLA, or maybe she already had, but they still went to prom anyway. It's not really clear, but it doesn't sound like a good situation. But I agree with everything you said. I didn't like that they made Allie seem like she wasn't such a great person when she seemed like a totally great person in the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you're right. They were kind of in a hard place because they wanted to have a romance with the girl from Okinawa, and they had to make you not hate Daniel for like just dumping Allie or something to go for this new girl.
Yep.
So he had to be the one to get the short shrift, I guess.
Yeah, you're totally right too. We need to know more, because right now we're kind of left with a sour taste in our mouth with Allie. I'm thinking like, well, what was so great about her then? I mean, why is Johnny and Daniel talking about her all the time?
Mm-hmm.
Come on, haven't you had a girl treat you like crap and you still loved her anyway?
I guess. I was giggling when you were talking about how she crashed his car, because I was thinking she was just redirecting his pain. She knew she was going to break up with him, so she crashed the car to make the breakup seem less painful. See?
Yeah, like, you don't want me anyway. Look what I did to your car.
Yeah.
Make it easy for you. Yeah.
And it was that car, right? It was the car that Miyagi gave him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
48.
Sure was. The one that he let her... kind of at the, what was it, the
dolphin
stuff in the parking lot.
He was like, slow down.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've had any woman treat me terrible. I guess. I can't remember. I probably would like it, though.
I was trying to think of your girlfriends.
I was pretty immature up till I got married, so I usually got dumped. They're like, yeah, I need to go on to something bigger and better. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. For you, I feel like the thing about going finding someone at UCLA probably hits more at home more than like crashing your car. You're the one that crashed the cars.
Right, yeah. I would be like, I totally understand. Yeah. I'll give you a ride to UCLA. Huh?
I mean, I just want to tell this one story. Richard and Lucy were in his truck, and you didn't it go up on the side?
Yeah, we flipped it on its side in a ditch.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
I reached down to change the station on the stereo. When you had to do that, when you had to reach down onto the dashboard and turn the knob to get a different station, I wasn't paying attention, and I ran off the road. That was on a date. And she still married me.
That's what did it, man. She's an adrenaline junkie.
Yeah, she adventurous. Yeah, showed that adventurous side. She was all in. That's awesome.
Where are we?
Rich's my turn? Number two.
Richard's
no?
turn.
Yep.
Number two.
Second. I'm going to go with. You know what? I do have a complaint. I guess, sort of, kind of. On the day of the fight, you know, between Sato and Miyagi. They never got to fight. It's like they had this huge buildup, and you're like, all right, I'm going to see Miyagi kick his ass. And then there was a typhoon. And
there was a lot of interruptions in this movie. Things, kisses, fights, getting interrupted, things, yeah.
They kept stringing you along with that, too. It's a carrot on the end of the stick thing. So I don't know how I feel about it, I guess. I kind of was a little disappointed. I'm like, I wanted to see Miyagi kick ass. I guess you did get a little bit of a reprieve beforehand. When Chosen was destroying Miyagi's family dojo in the garden, and then he showed up and he kicked their butts. He was actually pulling some moves and punching and kicking some dudes too. That was cool.
Yeah.
Thing is, you know, at the beginning of this movie, he defeats Kreese, but only by dodging, and Kreese is punching through car windows and then staring at his bloody head. You know, Miyagi just dodged. So up until this point, Karate Kid 1 and 2, Miyagi has only fought kids, basically. Because he fought the Cobra Kai, and then he fought all, like, Chosen and all his buddies. So that's why, that's the one cool thing about Karate Kid 3, if I remember, is he actually fights Kreese, you know, a real fight. So that's what we got to look forward to.
Yeah, and afterwards, I found myself questioning, too. I was having a hard time letting it go, because I'm like, well, Miyagi is pretty much undefeated at this point. Would have Sato defeated him? I mean, his hatred and dishonor could have turned him into a rage beast, you know? And it's like, Miyagi's untouchable, or is he? It's like the unstoppable force versus the immovable object. Who would have won?
Even Mike Tyson got beat eventually.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder, though, and I mean, I don't know. I'm not an expert, but I feel like what they were trying to say in the movie is the reason Miyagi left Okinawa, because, you know, when Sato challenged him to the fight when they were young over, you know, the arranged marriage, and he refused, so he left and never returned. And then, of course, when he does, he challenges him again. And I think the reason why he left, because he knew that he could defeat Sato, and because it was a fight to the death, he would kill him. And he didn't want to do that. I think that Miyagi could have. I mean, I think he kind of proved that when he was rescuing Sato from the typhoon, when the beam from his dojo fell on him and Miyagi karate chopped it in half to be able to rescue Sato. That to me shows that Miyagi could have easily defeated. It was a little, I mean, well, half the shit in these two movies are dumb. I think that he knew that that's what would have happened, that he would have defeated him, but not just by defeating him, but would have killed him. And that's not what he wanted to do, because that was his friend. So,
or even if he knew, even if he wasn't 100% sure, he probably just didn't. I mean, I could see him not wanting to risk killing him. You know, I bet you that was more what it was about versus risking his own life. Just not wanting to risk killing Sato or even just having one of them die. You know?
Well, yeah. I mean, who wants to, I mean, well, one, you don't want to die, right? I mean, I guess he didn't have a death wish if Sato had won, but also, you know, living with that for the rest of your life, knowing that you've killed your lifelong best friend. I mean, is that...
Yeah.
So.
Totally.
But he would have got the girl.
Well, maybe she was worth it. So I don't know. Maybe
well, he should have taken her with him, like he said. Why didn't you? Yeah. Loser.
Yeah, you're right. There's some questionable motives in there.
Well, maybe she didn't mean as much to him as what he meant to her.
I mean, it was interesting. Like, they really harped on this point, or focused, I should say, on this point of, you know, like, he showed the two rules. The first rule is karate's for defense only. And the second rule is learn the first rule first, or whatever it was. So just really important not to fight. And he brought that home by saying, so it's so important that I left my home country rather than fight my best friend. I think, Rima, you're right. It's important that it means to the death. This fight means to the death. We've seen that Miyagi is okay with fighting if it's a last resort. But I think it's important that this means to the death, so he will do whatever he can to avoid it.
Yeah. I kind of felt that was kind of my answer too. Maybe the writers or director was afraid to vilify Miyagi in some fashion to the audience. So they were like, yeah, probably should avoid him murdering somebody.
I mean, it's a good philosophy. I agree with it. Try not to fight if you're going to have to kill somebody. I mean, if you have to, yes, but if you can avoid it, it's probably better to avoid it.
Yeah, that's reasonable. Self-defense only, first rule.
Mm-hmm.
Getting punched really hurts.
And getting killed is not fun.
It hurts even more.
So, was that your number two, Rich?
So, yeah, that was my number two. I don't know. I wanted to see him fight. Still don't know who would have won. But, you know, I understand it was part of the plot, too. They had to shift the focus over to Daniel and Chosen for that fight, so.
It was exciting when Sato's like, all right, we're going to fight now, and he pulled his fist back. I was like, oh, here we go, and then it got interrupted.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, oh, well. Okay, my number two is things I liked. I really liked the chemistry between Daniel and Kumiko, and I thought Tamlin Thompson, is that her name?
Yeah.
Tamlin Thompson is adorable, and I believe that they were falling in love. I thought it was really cute when he asked her if she's, arranged to marry someone, and then she asked him the same thing and they're like, okay, good. And they go to hold hands and then they get interrupted because there's interruptions for everything.
I'm a free agent.
What does that mean? Since I'm available, baby. The tea ceremony was, I mean, I remember just being really wrapped up in that when it first happened, when I first saw it, thinking, oh man, that would be such a honor to have this woman go through this for me. You know, it just seems like such a special thing. And then he makes a dumb joke and she has a sour look on her face, like, this is serious. And he's like, I'm sorry. And then she takes the hairpin out and the music changes and it's like, oh my God, this is so beautiful. And then they have that kiss, which is really nice. And then it gets interrupted by a storm.
Right, yeah.
So I really just loved their whole relationship, even though I felt like they just kind of threw her in there to give him a love interest. That's my cynical side, but I thought their performances and their chemistry made it really great. And without her in the movie, I probably wouldn't like it nearly as much.
Tamlin Tomita.
Thank you. Appreciate Tomita. That. Scenes with Kreese were really intense. And I remember being so stoked that they started the movie that way right after the tournament, just because I love Karate Kid so much and it was a continuation of it. And it was so, like, I couldn't believe he was choking Johnny, and it was just messed up.
And
it's become such a crucial moment in the whole Cobra Kai series too, so it's great. I think we've talked about this before, but that was supposed to be the ending of the first movie. It was in the script, but the director felt like, no, it should end with that kick, and he's right. And they didn't even film it. They just said, now we're done with our movie, but they decided to go through with it and film it during Karate Kid 2 production. That was cool. The honk, I thought was, I remember thinking that was a little silly, but that's pretty much the point of it. So I thought it worked pretty well.
The what?
the honk, you know, where Mr. Miyagi. Miyagi's like, looks like he's going to kill Kreese, and then he goes, huh? Nico cracked up at that. I had him watching it. he was laughing. I like that the stakes were raised, you know, the first indication of that when they're on the plane on the way there, and Daniel says, if you fought Sato, do you think your father would have been the referee? And he goes, no referee. Well, then how do you know who wins? The one who dead doesn't. It's like, oh, this is for real. And then when they meet Chosen and he's squeezing Daniel's hand really hard, and then when they get in the car, the buddy slams the door. It's like, oh, I feel like I'm in a horror movie all of a sudden. Like, this is really intense. And just all those guys are really destructive and threaten to kill Daniel. And then at the end, when they're at the castle and Chosen tells Daniel to come over, and Mr. Miyagi says, Daniel-san, this not tournament, this for real. It's just cool that he's not fighting in a tournament now. He's fighting for his life. That was good. Mm-hmm. More exciting. And I think Chosen is actually a great bad guy. He had a little bit of a Bruce Lee look to him, I thought, with his cutness, you know, and his build. And
he was buffed.
Yeah. And I like the way he kind of smiles when he's doing bad things sometimes. He was good.
During the final fight, which was great, I liked it, but I had to make a conscious effort to, you know, what do they call it when you suspend belief? Because I was looking at Chosen and his body, he looked like a martial artist. And then you look at Daniel.
Yeah.
He's scrawny.
His bottom half is bigger than his top half. And it's like, well, how can he even move?
I know. But you know what, though? I think the fight was actually pretty good. You see him blocking his punches and it looks believable to me. I mean, when you see the people, you think, oh, this guy is going to totally kick this guy's ass. But when they're actually fighting, it looked pretty good to me. I thought it looked better than any of Daniel's fights in the first movie. So that's one area where I feel like this was one-upped it.
Yeah. The choreography I thought was awesome. And it was a really good fight, which helped me suspend. That was it. Suspension
suspend
of disbelief.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like the theme of honor, how it's all about Sato feeling like he's been disgraced. And that's just that moment just shaped his whole life. Reminds me of The Last of Us 2, if any of you played that, just where you get stuck on this one moment and the cycle of violence just gets perpetuated because of it. But he felt disgraced and his whole life just became, his heart hardened around that. And that was compelling. And same thing with Chosen. Daniel exposes his cheating with those fake weights at the market. And that he sees that as insulting his honor, even though it's just exposing his dishonor, really. But anyway, then he doesn't want to accept losing the bet over the ice chopping. And then he felt shame when Daniel saved that girl in the storm and he felt like a coward. So all those things together, he just felt so dishonored that the only option that these two guys feel like they have is to kill the source of their shame. And it's so stupid, but it also feels like something that people, especially men, would really do. So it's compelling to me.
Is that what honor means? Because how could you be dishonored if you're doing something terrible?
I know. I mean, it's twisted, but people are stupid. You know,
they mean shame and embarrassment. That's what honor is.
Yeah. They can rationalize, like, the honorable thing to do would be like, okay, you won the bet, you deserve that money. But he felt embarrassed. And so to him, that's besmirching his honor to be embarrassed.
So, maybe it's just a general term. Honor for Sato was holding a grudge for 40 years.
Yeah. I mean, it was interesting because if Sato is really Miyagi's best friend, then you got to think he must have been a good guy because Miyagi's a good guy. And you see that at the end after Miyagi saves his life, that he softens and he's like, okay, I'm going to help rebuild and we're going to have the dance at the castle again. And your student just taught me a lesson. He's just like a whole different person, you know? So, and Miyagi, I felt really happy for Miyagi. He got his best friend back. But yeah, just like when he's fixated on having been, disgraced because Miyagi went against tradition and Miyagi did, he took the girl from the guy. Right. And I don't know. It wasn't really clear whether he knew that Sato loved her, but it, apparently so. And I was thinking of that song because I'm like, yeah, maybe Miyagi wasn't so perfect there, but he did all for the glory of love.
And when Miyagi was at Sato's house, when Miyagi went to make peace with Sato at his house, he asks him straight up, "What has happened to you?"
Yeah.
And, you know, Sato looks kind of like into the camera or off into the distance. And I'm like thinking, I really wanted to have sex with Yuki. You know?
Yeah. I mean, it's like if you and I, like, you know, you slept with my girlfriend when we were 16 and then I made it my life's goal to kill you and turned into an asshole.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I can't imagine. I would just lay down and die. Just do
You'd
it,
have
man.
To leave the country, dude.
Just do it. Just do it, man. Not in the face, though. Not in the face.
Go for the, what did Mr. Miyagi call it? The prime target or something?
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, more things I liked. Funny stuff. I liked when in the shower, Daniel's like, "Hey, Mr. Miyagi, we need to have a strategy for my tournament career." "Oh, Miyagi, I already have one. Early retirement." That was funny. And then Miyagi says, "I have just the thing to make you feel better." And Daniel's like, "Probably got more work for me to do." And Miyagi goes, "Hit nail on head," which sounds like a figure of speech, but no, he's actually being literal. I like that. Daniel says, "How come every time I have a problem, you have work for me to do?" Miyagi says, "Cosmic coincidence."
Yeah.
And then the whole refugee, you're building this for a refugee. Oh yeah, from where? Fresno. I just thought that was funny. He was building his own guest house and didn't realize it.
That is funny if you know what Fresno's like.
Yeah, it's like a few hours away from where we grew up in Modesto. A couple hours.
Pretty nasty. It's probably, no offense to anyone who lives in Fresno.
The whole movie dissed Fresno, so. Miyagi says to Daniel when they're at that cannery, "You know, Miyagi and Yukie have first date here. Remember like was yesterday. Happen overload of fresh mackerel."
How romantic.
That's funny. Right. And I like that Kumiko doesn't get Daniel's jokes. Like he says, "I was absent the day they taught graceful," and she's like, "You were what?"
Yeah.
It's funny because the culture
added
thing.
A little bit of realism. I don't think two cultures like that would be getting on so well.
Right. And also he can't rely on his, that, you know, he's always got that kind of quips and she doesn't get him. So he can't rely on that charm. Or when he says, "Is the seat taken?" She's like, "This is serious. Asshole." And then, yeah, the primary target, that's what it was. Miyagi has Daniel drop the rag and then he goes for Daniel's primary target, which then that was a lesson because Daniel repeated that with Chosen.
Right.
When he tried to take his money. A lot of other stuff. I like the whole 50s dance, which reminded me of when Ralph Macchio was on Dancing with the Stars, which I totally watched because I wanted to see how he would do. He did pretty well.
Oh, yeah. How did he do?
He did well. I think he was like third from last or second from last.
Yeah, right on.
I liked when Miyagi said that one musician guy, I think Ichiro, he was in the same place doing the same thing, playing the same tune when I left.
Yeah, kind the old charming. Man.
I like the landscape, the environment, the lantern ceremony, just really beautiful shots. It was filmed in Hawaii. You mentioned, Rima, that it wasn't in Okinawa. It's filmed in Oahu, I think, and they built Okinawan-like structures and everything. Mm-hmm. One moment, I liked when Miyagi was looking at a picture of him and his father when he was just a little tyke. That was so cute.
Yeah.
And he's grieving. And then next scene, he's at the beach kind of staring out at the water with his eyes, you know, you can tell he's about to cry, and Daniel comforts him and talks about when his own father died. So now he, you know, I think this is the first time in the movies that he's mentioned his father died. In Cobra Kai, he says it was when he was 8 years old. But it's great because this is where Daniel's experience can help Miyagi for once. And that moment really got to me. I started to feel myself tear up a little bit too. That was mm-hmm. really touching. And then the next scene, they're training. They're doing all the punching and kicking and blocking, and then they give each other a five at the end. That was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then last, what I have on this list is just the end fight, which we've already talked about. I think it was better than anything Daniel had in the first movie. And even though I'm a little dubious on the whole drum technique, I just thought it was really dramatic and everything. And then the honk at the end, I felt like he was a little too intense with it. You know, it's supposed to be goofy, not honk, but
well, he was like in the middle of fighting for his life. Nose. So probably still having some intense feelings there.
Right. He's not going to be like, awooga or something.
Wedgie.
Yeah. Right.
Front wedgie.
Stick his tongue out. So that's all I got for that one.
Cool. I liked those better than the ones you didn't like.
Yeah, I had a lot that I liked too. That's why overall I would say on balance, you know, this is a movie I like, even though I had a lot of nitpicks.
Yeah, this is a movie of balance.
Rima?
Well, you've already mentioned it and talked about it, so I'm not really sure what I can really add, but I really liked the fight there at the end and the differences between this fight and the fight with Johnny, you know, in the tournament. You know, stakes are a lot higher. That's what made it more interesting, I think. And I liked it. I thought the choreography was really great. I think it was somewhat a little bit more realistic, with the exception of maybe like the drum technique that didn't feel was really that clear either. And I thought it was just kind of like, what, I didn't understand what was so special about this move. Like they kind of like in the first movie with the crane kick, I was like, that doesn't really look, I mean, effective to me. And when you're saying it's indefensible, I didn't buy it then, and I didn't buy it here, because it was, he was able to defend against it. So I thought, well, you know, so I didn't understand, you know, what was so awesome about this move. It didn't look so awesome to me, but they made it seem like it was. But other than that, I thought the fighting was really great. I thought it was, you know, kind of tense, you know, and Daniel's really getting the hell kicked out of him, and, you know, that this guy really does want to kill him. So it was interesting to see how Daniel could, you know, rise up against a fighter that, I mean, Chosen totally outskilled him. I mean, he's been fighting how long? You know, Sato's, you know, been, you know, teaching him for how long? And he's clearly a great fighter. And Daniel's still, I think, you know, new with his skills. And to see him kind of rise above was, I think, good. So I don't, you know, have a lot to add to what you already did. But that was my number one.
One thing about that fight that I thought this time that I never remember thinking before was, couldn't someone just sort of jump in? Like, how deep is that moat? Couldn't they just go over there and try to, like, are they like, oh, a fight, let's watch. You know, like, especially when Chosen punched Kumiko in the face, you'd think a bunch of people would jump over there and like put a stop to it.
Well, and that Miyagi would just let Daniel fight in a fight to the death. I'm like, would you really let a 17-year-old kid do that? It's like,
good luck, dude.
Like, I'll do have to technique. Explain but, to your mom yeah. when I get home I, what they'll I, happen to you.
I know. Sorry, Mrs. LaRusso. But I thought, you know, I thought what the movie was saying was that because there was a moat, they could not get to them, which that was the whole point of having a moat. But it just, to me, it was hard to strain my disbelief that people wouldn't just like jump in the water or jump across or something. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Because Chosen had to like, what did he do? Did he parachute in? No, he like ziplined in, huh?
Yeah. He interrupted.
Right, yeah. It's like, holy crap. That would scare the shit out of me if I saw somebody doing that. Kudos to Daniel for holding his own. Yeah, that was a good fight, because I went back and I had to watch it a couple of times, because I'm like, wait a minute. How did Daniel win that thing? He's like half the size of this guy. And then, but, you know, the fight was well choreographed. He's blocking him. Yeah,
he's blocking him. He punched him a few times in the ribs.
He had some good hits on him. Yeah.
At the end, they were both bloody. I was like, hey, this is a good fight.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think it was a lot better than the one with him and Johnny.
I know. Yeah. Well, this one was for real, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, fight to the death. Maybe on Cobra Kai, they'll have a fight to the death.
I'm still really waiting for Johnny and Daniel to fight in Cobra Kai.
Can you imagine that? Johnny and Daniel to the death? That would be terrible. That would be an awesome and terrible ending to a series.
I know. Maybe if they both die, that would be the only good ending. No.
That's dark. So dark.
Well, thanks for tuning in. Bye.
Bye.
Hope you enjoyed the podcast.
Don't get bit. All right. Where are we? Richard, number one.
My last highlight is I think Miyagi and Daniel should have stayed in Okinawa. To be honest with you, I mean, things are going pretty well at the end of the movie. The village is beautiful. It's now out of danger because Miyagi reconnected with Sato.
He also Moneybags.
Yeah, Mr. Moneybags. I mean, this village is going to be freaking like a resort now, right? And then he reconnected with Yuki. Then you got Daniel and Kimiko make a cute couple, throwing a little running on the beach with some Peter Cetera playing in the background. I mean, come on, how can you go
can't go wrong with Peter Cetera, man?
And then I wrote down that in my opinion, probably because of what you were talking about, Rima, at the beginning with Ali, Kimiko seems like way better than Ollie in this movie. It's like, why is Ollie such a prize when she's wrecking cars and dumping people?
Mm-hmm.
And here's cute little Kimiko with, like Jason said, with Daniel, with you know, a lot of chemistry. Everything was going really good. She was really cute.
Yeah,
but at the beginning of Karate Kid 3, you find out Kumiko had a heroin overdose. So,
oh,
I'm just kidding.
Always, yeah, always the drugs, man.
That's so terrible. No, she was adorable. She was soft-spoken, and she was sweet, and, you know, she was definitely a different character than Allie, for sure, but they had a really good chemistry. But I don't know, he had good chemistry with Allie, well, too, but...
You know, one thing about, like, I feel like I've seen a lot of American guys are like, oh, yeah, you know, go overseas, and women are better because they'll take care of you and everything, and so... I don't really like that, but with Kumiko, she didn't seem like that type. She's like, I can choose whoever I want to marry, for one. And two, when they were going to race to the castle, he's like, I'll give you a head start. And she goes, not necessary, thank you. Of course, then she cheated and took a head start anyway. But you just get the feel that she's like her own woman and, you know, right. She's not that stereotypical, like docile kind of a person, even though she's really nice.
Yeah. But I was a little confused. I'm like, you know, why don't you take me with you back to America? And I'm like, why don't you just stay there, dude? You already got a place. Just sell your shit in America and stay there. Both the guys, you know, got the girls, so to speak. So, I mean, it's like, come on. Sato, right? So Sato, the Mr. Moneybags, like you said, he could hire Daniel to replace Chosen because now Chosen is disgraced, right? So Daniel would have a job. Miyagi could become a paid consultant, spreading his life's wisdom to improve Sato's toxic corporate culture. I mean, why go back to dumb old L.A.?
Yeah, Miyagi said he couldn't stay, but he didn't say why.
Because that would be too fairy tale of an ending, and that's just not what happens in life.
And then they can do in the third movie what they did at the beginning of this movie, just push all that side of shit and say, oh, crap, I got to go back to L.A.
I mean... You know, I could see a 16-year-old or however old Daniel is, kid, probably 17 by this time, 18, not wanting to leave the United States, you know, as a teenager. But Miyagi, who grew up there, and now everything, the reason why he left is not no longer an issue. It's all smoothed over. I could see him wanting to say he has a place there.
But, I don't know. I think it would have been a good. I think it would have been a better ending.
Yeah.
All right. My number one is some background stuff. This movie had the same director and writer as Karate Kid 1 and 3. John G. Avildsen directed, and Robert Mark Kamen wrote it. Kamen also co-created and co-wrote movies in the Taken series and the Transporter series.
Oh, yeah? And
he also co-wrote Taps, The Fifth Element, The Professional, and Lethal Weapon 3. So he's pretty prolific back in that time frame. Yeah. Now he has, like, vineyards in Sonoma, and he has Cayman wines.
This dude's my hero.
Let's see. The song that Chosen puts on in the car when, you know, he's picked them up from the airport, and it's before they know for sure that he's a bad guy. I mean, he gave Daniel that really hard handshake, but otherwise they don't know. They're playing this song, and it's the same song that they played at the Encino Oaks Country Club when Johnny and Allie were dancing and Daniel walked in, got spaghetti all over himself. It's called Fascination. It's a waltz from 1904 by Italian composer Fermo Dante Marchetti. So I thought that was interesting because it's maybe sort of ominous in the Karate Kid universe to hear that song.
I'd say. Daniel better watch out for some spaghetti.
Right. I'm hungry for spaghetti.
Miyagi, yeah, right. Why do I want spaghetti all of a sudden? Miyagi says, as they're in the military base and that used to be the village that he's looking for, he says, Miyagi, remember first time father teach fishing right off this point was 1927. But in Cobra Kai, we see on his gravestone that he was born in 1925. So I'm like, man, you must have a good memory if you're 2 years old. First took you. I think it's an error, but, or, you know, it could be that the gravestone is wrong. That would be one way you could explain that. Or he's wrong about the year.
They just put him to work early back then.
Yeah.
This, I think, was Tamlyn Tomita's first movie, but she's been a working actress ever since. She was in Joy Luck Club, Quentin Tarantino's Four Rooms, The Day After Tomorrow. Wait, I don't know if she was in the Quentin Tarantino one, but she was in Four Rooms, The Day After Tomorrow, and she's been in a ton of TV shows, most recently Commodore O on Star Trek Picard.
Oh, really?
That's cool.
The mean Commodore.
Right on.
She said in an interview that the dancing scenes that Ralph Macchio was actually the one teaching her how to dance. Maybe not the, like, elbone dance, but probably more the swing dancing stuff, I would imagine.
That's cool.
I guess he was always a dancer. And she also said that she would be interested in being in Cobra Kai. This was, I think, before season one even came out. But having heard that, I feel like if Daniel goes to Okinawa in Cobra Kai season three and Tamlyn Tomita isn't in it, then somebody messed up somewhere.
Right. It's like, wait a minute.
Yeah. Has to be organic, though. I don't want him to just do it for, I mean, I love fan service, but it still has to kind of make sense in a way. So hopefully if they do that, they write it well, if they bring her back.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. Daniel asks Miyagi about the banners in his family studio, and he says these are rules to karate. Rule number one, karate for defense only. Rule number two, first learn rule number one, which I thought, you know, he was pointing out that before I tell you what rule number two is, you have to really take rule number one to heart. But it turns out that the Japanese on that actually means take the previous rule to heart. So rule number two is actually see rule number one. And then last, the tea ceremony. I was trying to find out if that's actually a real thing. And I found this on Tumblr, this description. It says the Japanese tea ceremony is called Chanoyu, Sadu, or simply Ocha in Japanese. It's a choreographic ritual of preparing and serving Japanese green tea called matcha, together with traditional Japanese sweets to balance with the bitter taste of the tea. Preparing the tea in this ceremony means pouring all one's attention into the predefined movements. The whole process is not about drinking tea, but it's about aesthetics, preparing a bowl of tea from one's heart. The host of the ceremony always considers the guests with every movement and gesture. Even the placement of the tea utensils is considered from the guest viewpoint, especially the main guests called the shokyaku. So that sounds like it's doesn't necessarily need to be about romance, though. You know, it could just be for your friends. So I looked for a few minutes and I couldn't find anything about like a special tea ceremony that means the two people are falling in love. So I don't know if that part is real or not.
That's cool. Yeah. I've never been in a tea ceremony.
No, me neither.
I don't think anyone likes me enough for
matcha, though.
Tea ceremony, but I do enjoy matcha tea. Yeah, I have some. It's good.
Well, you guys, if you both come over, I'll give you a tea ceremony.
Let's do it with coffee, though.
Yeah, and beer.
Beer ceremony. That would be awesome.
You're like, here is a Budweiser, and you like very carefully grab the...
Yeah.
What do you call the thing that pulls the bottle cap remover, whatever?
Is that a dark beer? Hey, take this seriously, bro.
All right, let's get in some notes.
We have covered all of my notes, so I don't have anything to add at this point. I think we've covered mine thoroughly.
Yeah, you got all mine in there, too. Did we talk about when he shows up at the ice-breaking competition? Yeah, and he bets the $600 on Daniel. Mm-hmm. I thought that was pretty funny. It's like... The look on Daniel's face was spot on. Was like, he's like, what are you doing, Mr. Miyagi? And then Miyagi's praying the whole time next to him.
Yeah, like, no
please
kidding.
Don't lose my $600. Please don't lose my $600.
Daniel breaking ice and Miyagi breaking wallets.
Yeah. That's right.
Okay, I got a few. I thought it was interesting that it started out recapping scenes from the first movie. And at first I thought it was, let's catch you up on the story. But then I realized each one of the scenes that they chose to show had some relevance to this movie. And so that makes it kind of like a, you know, like they do previously seen on with TV shows to get us ready for this week's episode.
Right. Yeah.
I don't remember that being very common in movies though. So it's interesting. But like they showed the first time Miyagi was trying to catch a fly with chopsticks, and then in the movie he finally gets one, which I think symbolizes that this is his story now.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yep.
They show Miyagi doing a crane technique at the beach, and Daniel says, "Where'd you learn it from?" And he says, "Father teach. You must have had some father." Oh yes, that just reminds us of how great his father was. And later we see him say goodbye to him on his deathbed, his father. They show the Medal of Valor, and then Daniel gives him a case that he made for it. I'm not sure why they showed Miyagi beating up the Cobra Kai in their skeleton costumes, maybe just to remind us that he's a badass for when later he beats up people here. They show Daniel at the end of the tournament using the crane kick on Johnny. I mean, partly because that feeds right into the next scene of out in the parking lot, but also because the crane kick is, he tries that again and fails. So it's just sort of to remind us of all these things, I guess. They didn't really need to do any of it, in my opinion.
I don't know how much... I don't remember how much time there was between the first...
2 years.
And was it... maybe they just felt people needed a refresher, maybe. I guess if it was a longer timeline, it would make more sense to like, oh, hey, remember everything that happened because it was so long ago? But 2 years, I guess, isn't really that long. But maybe that's why.
And they don't do that anymore. I mean, I guess these days it's easy to go back and watch the first movie to refresh yourself.
Yeah, back then, if you didn't have the VHS tape.
Yeah. A few more. So Yukie, I thought this was really cute. He's like, she's like, to Miyagi, she's like, sing that song you used to sing. He's like, oh, I haven't sung in such a long time. Oh, please. And then he starts singing, and I think it's the same song he was singing in Karate Kid when he was,
when he was drunk,
thinking about his wife.
No.
So I'm like, oh, I guess you use the same moves on all the women.
It ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, one hit wonder.
It's not broken. And then, of course, speaking of music, there's the song The Glory of Love by Peter Cetera, which was a number one hit in the U.S. and was all over the radio when this movie was out. Do you remember that?
Oh, hell nice. Yeah. Yeah. This was huge.
When they were running on the beach.
And so that brings me back to this movie was released the summer after my freshman year in high school, me and Rich. So emotions were high.
Yeah.
They played that at every school dance.
I remember it being all over the radio. I mean, I just love Peter Cetera. Chicago and Peter Cetera. Oh my God. Those songs always did it for me and still do. It still takes me back. But I think I read that Glory of Love was originally written for Rocky, one of the Rocky movies, and they decided not to use it and they used it here. Didn't they do that in the first Karate Kid too?
I didn't know that. Yeah. Best, you're the best.
Yes,
around.
Yes. Thank you.
So two songs that are totally like signature songs of each movie. And in the case of Glory of Love, it just even like outgrew the movie. I would say probably more people were into that song than were into Karate Kid.
Yeah. I think it was like a huge, I can't remember. I'm sorry. I don't remember what it was, but something, it was a huge hit or something. It did something for the song. It was, I guess, made it like a, such a big deal. And this Karate Kid 2 actually made more money than the first one. It was like considered out of all the Karate Kids, this one was the bigger hit, if that means anything. Right, so it was the song. Yeah, that's what it was.
The biggest hit in the whole series. It could be. Miyagi shows Daniel his will because he knows he's going to fight Sato. And he says, Yukie, get house here. You get house and pick up back home. I thought that was interesting because, you know, we know later on that Daniel does end up owning that house. So here we see, well, yeah, that makes sense. It was in the will.
Right. Yeah, that was the first thing I thought of. It's like, oh, he never changed his will.
Right. And then I had a few more notes that we already covered, but the last one we haven't covered is, you know, the storm, the people were trying to get inside, and this one woman was carrying a baby, and it looked like she really dropped the baby.
Oh, no.
And it looked like a real baby, and I don't think she was supposed to have dropped it, but I think they just rolled with it because she just picked the baby up. I don't know.
I hope it was a doll. I hope it wasn't a real baby. Yeah.
It didn't seem like it. I gotta go back and look again. Anyway, I'm
just gonna pretend it was a doll.
Yeah, I'm glad I watched it twice and you know that we talked because I like it more now.
Oh, good.
I think I like all it less. Now after hearing all your gripes,
because I gave you all my bad points.
You really you like brought them to the forefront there, where I was kind of just like, push them aside, and here they are, up in front, so front and center. No, it's teasing. Oh, well.
You're welcome. Glad I could
help. Balance.
Next week is Karate Kid 3, and man, I just feel like the most fun we can have with that one will be to be completely honest about how we feel about it, but we'll see what happens. I haven't seen it in a long time, but there's more to come on this episode, so we'll take a little break and stay with us. Back, and we have some listener feedback, and I actually, you know, we haven't gotten a whole lot of feedback for Cobra Kai, so I was a little surprised actually how much feedback we got for Karate Kid 2. It's really interesting. I guess it resonated with a bunch of you guys, so that's awesome. So here we go.
Okay, first one we have is from David SK. He says, I loved that it picks up right after the tournament, but I enjoyed it less than the original.
Ditto.
Dobolino Bob Grippy writes in, no talking. Don't know, never attacked by tree. I had a huge crush on Kimiko. I always thought Chosen could kick Johnny's butt. Yeah, I think he could kick everyone's butt. I mean, he was training the American soldiers. That's true, huh? Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yep.
I just realized that. That's what Daniel saw when he went to the dojo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They mentioned it too, because I had read this comment, and then on my second watch, I was looking for it, and yeah, they mentioned that he was training American soldiers in there. Brad Holt says, I've always enjoyed it. It's not as good as the original, but I did find the glimpse into the culture of Okinawa very interesting.
Yeah, it was nice. The culture and the traditions were nice. Juan Frosto says, I enjoyed it. I recently rewatched the first three, and they were very enjoyable. Even the third one?
Question mark. Joey Poole says, Sato and the drum technique and whatever that death machine was, in Sato voice, Miyagi. Karate Kid 2 holds up, very enjoyable.
That was a very good Sato.
That was very good.
Miyagi.
It was funny when the two of them were talking together.
Yeah.
Because Miyagi talked like this and talk like this.
Yeah. Kind of a stereotypical, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Mario Alberto Fierro says, it's a nice 80s movie. There's a particular scene that stuck in my mind when Daniel and Kumiko were having the tea. For me, it was like Daniel was transitioning from innocence into adulthood. It's just a perfect example of a coming-of-age movie moment. Interrupted by a storm.
Typhoon.
Dope.
They didn't get much notice for that, huh? That came in. It was like all peaceful, and the next, the trees were falling down.
But if you look, I remember actually one of the times I watched the movie after the first time, I was like, I'm going to look and see if I can see that storm coming. And then you do notice that, oh, it's getting pretty windy out there while they're making goo-goo eyes at each other.
Oh, maybe I was caught up in their googly eyes at each other and was totally not even looking at the weather. But it seemed calm, at least for a part of it anyway. And then, it must have been caught up in their little romantic scene. Bianx Fargus says, Last Song Syndrome, Glory of Love.
Have you ever heard of that? Last Song Syndrome?
No.
Nope.
I looked it up. Apparently it's an experience or an inability to dislodge a song that's last heard and prevent from repeating itself in one's head. Just means you can't get a song out of your head.
Well, and they play it on the radio so much, too. At least in the 80s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. P. Ilani Wakwiro? It is my favorite of the KK franchise. The entire movie is about loyalty and love. Pat Morita's performance when talking about his wife and child are often overlooked. It's very nuanced and layered and impactful. Sato was a one-dimensional antagonist, but he served the plot. And seeing so many Asian faces on the big screen truly blew me away as a young person. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. I don't think it was very common in the 80s. Yeah, not even now, actually. All right, we have a couple of calls. Here's Steve Brown.
Miyagi say same thing to father when same thing happened. Father say was stupid. Father was right. Hey, House Podcastica, this is Steve, and I'm watching The Karate Kid Part 2 now, and I remember that quote. I just loved it. Such a great movie. I'm right now at the part with Peter Cetera's Glory of Love playing. And it occurred to me that I think at however old I was, 16 years old, I guess, this was my first introduction to Chicago. Even though this was a Peter Cetera, solo song, but definitely this started my love for the band Chicago and Peter Cetera. Okay. Wow, such a good movie. I just finished it. I kind of forgot a little bit about the ending. I mean, I knew the exact, what happened, but it was good to see Daniel triumph. It was the ice-breaking scene, obviously, is a callback to the beer bottle breaking scene from Karate Kid 1. But I just love the enhancements they did from the first movie to this movie were really, really great. Just the differences, the little changes, little things they made. I loved, I forgot to mention at the beginning of the podcast, or the beginning of my voicemail, that, the flashbacks that they showed at the beginning, reminding you of what had happened in Karate Kid 1, was so good to set you in the mood for where this chapter was going to go, and of course leading into part 3, which I hope you guys do it, but at the same time there's a lot good in that part 3, but there's also a lot really bad in it. So can't wait to hear what you guys thought. Talk to you later.
The main reason I want it do 3 is because I just want to, because we're covering Cobra Kai, I want to like catch all the references to the movies,
references.
I'm also curious to watch it again just because I haven't seen it in so long.
Well,
Definitely. I feel like we should, but I think maybe we should limit our podcast to 30 minutes.
That's pretty short.
All right, 45?
I don't plan
okay,
on
okay, this is
being...
what I liked about the show.
We could just have fun totally trashing it like Jason and Lucy did on Fear. So we could just totally unleash on
it. I mean,
it.
I definitely don't plan on being as thorough with it as I have been with these first two movies. And then we have another call from Jonathan Bukalil, who it's great because he has been a longtime listener of Podcastica, but he rarely calls in or anything. So I'm excited to hear this. I think this is just his impression of our suggestion to watch Cobra Kai.
Hi, guys. After arriving in New York from L.A., I am quarantined. So I decided to binge watch Cobra Kai, and it was awesome. From the music to the settings, covered in nostalgia, and the montages, all the glorious montages. Classic hero's journey with all the callbacks and everything I wanted to see, and none of my expectations were subverted. Hawk, the cafeteria bully beatdown, all the fist-pumping moments, and the tournament itself were all incredible. And now I get to listen to the podcasts. Can't wait. This is just what I needed after all the lockdowns and 32 hours of The Last of Us. Great series. Look forward to season 2.
Awesome. Right on. Great, great.
Cool. Glad you're digging it. I mean, my expectations were subverted. I thought it was going to suck. And I did not expect to be getting into Johnny's backstory. But yeah, I'm glad you loved it.
Yeah, it's awesome.
All right, that is our show. Thanks for listening, everybody. Appreciate it. If you want to write in or record a message and send it in like Jonathan and Steve did, you can email us at waxonwaxoff@podcastica.com.
We also put up a post for each week's episode on our Facebook page at facebook.com/housepodcastica.
And be sure to check out the other great podcasts at podcastica.com.
You're about to get going with Umbrella Academy.
Yeah, season 2 comes out this week. I'm not sure when this will be published, but July 31st is when Umbrella Academy season 2 is released. We did cover season 1 on Strange Indeed. So really fun series based on a comic book series. Really fun. We had a great time covering it. And can't wait. Paik's going to join me for that one. And we're pretty excited.
Have you seen that, Rich? I haven't seen it.
No, I haven't seen it.
You gotta watch it. Umbrella Academy. It's like superhero stuff, right? Powers.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sure is. A little bit different. Not your straight up kind of superheroes. A little different. Cool. Yep.
On Walking Dead cast, we just had our 400th episode, 10th anniversary special, where we had showrunner Angela Kang, and then we played a bunch of clips from over the past 10 years on the podcast, and then a bunch of listeners called in, and so we played that and everybody cried and it was awesome.
Cool.
And next week on this podcast, or in 2 weeks, it will be the Karate Kid Part 3 for our 20-minute podcast. All right, that's our show.
Thanks for listening.
Honk. We'll be right back.